Right, sermon time. So I'm going to speak, aren't I? No, I'm not. My proxy, my management, Heather, is now going to interview somebody, and you're going to find out what she's on about.
Please come out, Sharon. Okay, this is Sharon. This is Sharon Tipp, who is a neighbour of mine and a very lovely person. If you don't know her, if you do know her, you'll know how she's a really lovely person. And we've invited her today to ask her about what she's doing in Kenya and, first of all, how it all started. So, Sharon, can you tell me about Kenya?
Thank you. Morning, everybody. We started the charity, Kenya Help Charity, 14 years ago. And I'd just like to tell you quickly how it started. My husband and I went to Kenya for a holiday, very nice holiday. While we was there, there was lots of tourists giving the children in need sweets and food and drink. So one day we went to the mountains. While we was up in the mountains, there was a family of 13 children. So we was giving out the food and the soda and the sweets. And there was a little boy in the corner and he was asleep. And I couldn't wake him. So I asked our driver, who speaks Swahili, and said, "What's wrong with the little boy?" And he had malaria. So what happened was the mama, because he had malaria, or because he was ill, she put him to one side and basically he was dying. So because I love children so much and I thought I must do something, so I went down from the mountains and went to my hotel and asked the doctor, what could I do? So the doctor gave me an injection to take up to the mountains and just inject the little boy and just hope for the best. So we went up to the mountains. The driver gave him the injection. We come down, and for 2 days I was concerned and worried about the little boy. And then when we went back, he was running around. He was fine. So it's lovely. It's lovely that I saved a little boy, but then I knew it was going to be expensive, so I said to my husband, would you mind paying for the rest of my holiday so that I can spend £1,000 on this little boy? And at the end of the holiday, I paid the money, and when I paid it, it was £6. So it was £6 to save a little boy. So I asked my husband if we can come back the following year and I'll try and raise some money. I'll try and raise £2,000 to save these children that were starving. They had many different medical problems. And I raised £12,000. So I went back to Kenya, went in the villages, and there were so many children that I tried to help, but I wasn't very good at it. I was giving them orange juice that gives them diarrhoea. I was doing it all wrong, basically. And I came back and I still had £8,000. So my husband said, you either give it to another charity or you set up a charity yourself. So we set up the charity. We now have 31 children that are in boarding school that we look after, ranging from 2 years old to 27. So just as soon as we take the children on and we look after them, because they're usually orphaned, we carry on looking after them for the rest of their lives. But we're in need of certain things, and I don't want you, if you do charity work and you pass your clothes and things to some other charity, please don't carry on doing that. But if you do happen to have any suitcases, clothes, shoes, they don't have to be new, they can be all old, but we just desperately need. I take about 20 cases over there. I'm going there in October, and it's 19 suitcases. But if you happen to have anything at all, Heather's got the items that we need, and if Heather don't mind, you'd pass to Heather and she'll pass to me. But thank you for listening.
So when, you said it all, haven't you, really, but yeah. Okay, well, thank you for listening. But the reason I wanted Sharon to speak to you is because when she was telling me, I thought, I'm sure there are people here that would like to be part of it. So I just felt, you know, if you've got old suitcases and you don't want them anymore, then what an obvious place for them to be sent. I will be writing an article in The Connect so that for people who aren't here and people at home, if they've missed it somehow, I will write an article saying about the things that Sharon has asked for, and also I'll give a synopsis of what she said. But I think she's doing a tremendous work. I mean, she goes over there, so not a penny is wasted, and all the money that goes to that charity, she does not use it to go out there. It's all her own money that takes her out to Kenya, and her family are all involved. Their hearts are so for these communities that they go out themselves on a regular basis, and they have fairs where they sell all sorts of bits and pieces. We've given them a lot of our rubbish, well, things that we brought from our last house that just don't work in our present house, and she's been able to sell them, and then that money goes into the charity. So if you have anything, please let me know, and then see if it's something that she could sell. Yes, so just thank you for this morning and that opportunity, and I hope, Sharon, that we really bless you and your work, because I think it's just amazing. Thank you.
I have to say that Sharon is no sort of violet hiding away, and she'll be there to talk to you if you wish during the tea and coffee session upstairs afterwards. You can talk to her as much as you like, and I'm sure she'll answer and be pleased to be with you. Now, bread. For us, bread is basic to our diet. We probably all eat bread at least once during the day. Sandwich, with soup, toast, some way or other, we eat it. It's our basic diet, in a way, if you like. Of course, other cultures have something else as their basic food. Could be rice, chapatis, or in Kenya, I was given something called ugali, which is made out of tapioca, and you cut it and wish you hadn't. It's not something I could recommend, but it's the basic diet in parts of Kenya, for at least. For us, bread is so common that we take it for granted. Just look at supermarket shelves and see how many different types of bread there are around. So many choices. What will I have today? For many centuries, bread was also the centre of a village community. If you think about it, much of the livelihood of the a village would come through bread. There'd be farmers planting, sowing, caring for the crop, harvesting, and then taking it to the windmill for the miller to grind down to flour to be sold into and made into bread. And the windmill would dominate a village. Bread was the central thing. In Jesus' time, that was true too, but it also had a special symbolic meaning. The Hebrew people were enslaved in Egypt, and as they left, they prepared unleavened bread, which could be cooked quickly and taken on their journey. So always bread was a symbol of the moving out of slavery into freedom. It also had another symbolic meaning, that of welcome. If somebody came to your house, it was your sacred duty to show hospitality. You had to give them something. You had to entertain the stranger. And as you entertained the stranger, it was seen that you entertained God himself. I suspect that in this part of the world, that's been taken over by tea and biscuits, but that's another matter. Following the feeding of the 5,000, Jesus was realistic about the motivation of the crowd. He knew that most people were following him just hoping that he would repeat the miracle and keep them fed with bread. But he told his disciples to seek a different type of bread, a bread which was different, a bread which was long-lasting, the bread of life, a symbol of his life given for us. Jesus' body would be broken. He would be killed on behalf of all. His body would be shared for all the world to see. And he said, I am the bread of life. I am the source of divine life. Now, when he says, I am, he's actually saying something very, very specific. It sounds a very common phrase to us. But for the Jews and people listening to him, those words, I am, also have the meaning of divinity, of God's presence. I am. And so John's gospel is full of phrases which Jesus gathered together to show God's presence. I am the resurrection. I am the door. I am the way. I am the truth. I am the light. I am the true vine. I am the good shepherd. I am life itself. I am the bread. These phrases all have the underlying meaning of God being present. The I am is a meaning for us that God is symbolized in these words. Jesus is saying, I'm showing you the very being, the very essence of God. Receive me and you receive God himself. For you I will be the door, the way, the life itself, a good shepherd, and as here, the very bread you need to live on. And as we know, the Last Supper was a reenactment of this idea of Jesus being broken and shared for all. And that we will be dealing with again next week at our communion service. But there was another side to this as well. Jesus could not simply be talking about bread as a symbolic gesture, but also as a physical thing itself. He could not have wanted people to be starving, to be left out, to be omitted from the banquet of life, the earthly banquet. And so at the Last Supper, having had bread and wine with his disciples, he then gets up and he kneels at the feet of his disciples and he serves them by washing their feet. He shares with them service and expects us to do the same. As we share the divine life, we also share the good things that this life provides. In this world, nobody should go hungry and be disregarded. Nobody should be left out. As the writer of the Proverbs says, those who are generous are blessed, for they share their bread with the poor. We are called upon to share the life of the church and the life of the bread itself with all who need it. And to emphasize this, we have two more visitors this morning who've come to speak to you or to be seen by you. And I think you're going to overhear part of their conversation and see what they're on about. So can we please call forth Jesus and St. Peter?
If you find anything funny, please feel free to laugh. It's his script, not ours. And a flight of imagination. This is Peter, and I'm Jesus.
Hey, Jesus.
Yes, Peter.
Can I ask you a simple question?
As long as you don't expect a simple answer.
Well, it's about a certain statement you made the other day, much to the displeasure of certain people.
Would these certain people be the people that wander around the Galilean countryside with only a stick and one set of clothing?
Perhaps.
So, I've upset the disciples again. All right, so what did I say?
You said we've to become like children. More than that, you said we wouldn't get into the kingdom unless we became like little children. What did you mean?
Well, Peter, how would you describe children?
Naive, innocent, harmless, I suppose. Oh, and a bit wet at times.
Naive, innocent, harmless, and wet at times. How many children do you have, Peter?
Jesus, thanks to you, I hardly seen my wife for 3 years. But at the last count, we don't have any.
Then the quicker you have some, the better. You'll soon find out that they're not so innocent, naive, or harmless as you think. Anyone who thinks differently has never been to a playgroup or a nursery.
So what are they like?
Use your memory. Think of the children that we've met. What about the ones in the temple, for instance?
I've lost my place.
They
just sounded like the cat's choir, and you had the cheek to say we're perfecting God's praise.
Peter, our musical tastes may differ, but I don't think you can deny that they were really enthusiastic.
Not like the Pharisees, eh, Jesus?
Not like the Pharisees. And not like a lot of adults who think God is only pleased when you look as delirious as a dressmaker's dummy.
So we're to be enthusiastic. Anything else?
Well, think of a girl, Peter. Think of Jairus' daughter. What do you remember about her?
Now, if there was an undertaker's dummy...
That's right. But she trusted me. I said, get up, and she got up. How many adults take me at my word, including a certain company of ex-civil servants and fishermen?
So we're to be enthusiastic and trustful. Is that it?
There's more, Peter. Think of a field with 5,000 people. What should we give them to eat?
Oh, you mean the little boy that Andrew brought to you. But what quality did that boy show?
It begins with G.
Generosity?
That's very good. You should try crosswords.
So to be like children, we must be enthusiastic, trustful, and generous.
And there's something else. Do you remember the crowd of men who surrounded me wanting to ask very clever questions? Do you remember who came through the crowd?
Oh, you mean the little girl with jam on her face?
I most certainly do. The little girl with jam on her face.
Do we have to get jam on our faces to get into the kingdom of heaven?
No, but think of what her mother said when she came to take her back. She was all apologetic and she said, I'm sorry, Master, she's awfully curious.
So curiosity, one of the things we should learn from children.
Yes, and in that department, Peter, you get 10 out of 10.